All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast, Wednesday, September 6th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com. For short, always still time to grab a free, still set right now, 7-day trial to our projection system with optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings powered by Lineup Lab. Those 7 days, you know, you sign up now. You can do this quick math. That'll take you through the first week of NFL, so you're all good to go.
It's Thursday.
Yeah, you can do it, buddy.
Yep, you're right. You got it.
Yep, yeah, it's going to take you all the way there. And if you get really smart and we forget to take the link, that it might get you till next Thursday too. so we free for 3 days, then $29.95 a month after that. If you want to go for a little longer period, we have a 33% offer for $120 for the next 6 months. That'll take you through, I believe, most of the NFL season also. So all of our stuff is wrapped under one package: MLB, NFL, NBA. When the time comes, all of our subs are $29.95, all inclusive. So go over DFSR.com/NFL to sign up and you're all good to go. Buddy, week one, I cannot believe it's here. Can you believe it? Do you feel like, did it come at you like a racehorse?
No.
No, it did not. Did it come at you like a slow turtle kind of inching its way toward the finish line?
No.
Neither. It just kind of came at you. It's just kind of here and we're ready to go.
It was kind of regular. It just kind of came up to me at like its average speed.
I got to say, you're bringing absolute fire to that already.
That's one of my favorite podcasting devices, which is to take the obvious setup and just to turn it right back on its head, Doug. You know how that works.
He's not the best guy in the business, color guy in the business for nothing, folks. All right, so we have week one on us. There's been a whole offseason of time to write about different considerations going into this season for FanDuel and DraftKings. And we're kind of here now. You know, I think we're going to see some industry consensus on some stuff. I think we're going to see ways that you can get separation. Today, we're going to kind of focus on just some cash game plays, some value plays that, you know, some guys I think are going to be on the chalkier side. Some might, you know, we might be able to get a little bit under-owned. And then tomorrow, we'll be back doing a full game-by-game breakdown. We'll take a look at every game and all the different guys you can consider. But today, like I said, for our purposes here, we'll kind of focus on cash game strategy and who we think some of the either A, more popular players are going to be, or just some of the quote safer plays are going to be, so that we can just kind of focus our cash games going into week one for FanDuel and DraftKings. So let's start at quarterback. Quarterback, I do think is to me it kind of seems obvious, but I'm wondering where you kind of land here in terms of quarterback. So we wrote up our value article, cash game article that went up on Tuesday. I wrote up Aaron Rodgers as the top overall play. Now he gets a matchup against Seattle. Our system likes the matchup here, or doesn't hate, let me rephrase, doesn't hate the matchup, but kind of just likes Rodgers' skill set. We talked a lot about him last year just in terms of fantasy quarterback. Where do you see Rodgers coming in, like in terms of your comfort level of playing him in cash games, considering it's a Seattle matchup?
Yeah, it's going to be tricky, I think, because I think actually a lot of people are going to be deciding between the two quarterbacks in this game, simply because Wilson, you know, is a high-profile running quarterback, big arm, who's young. I think people continue to project growth for young players. And I think, you know, this is going to be a theme we probably bring up throughout the season, but I tend to think that people project too much growth on average for young players across all the sports that we cover. I think that's a mistake I see made very frequently, and especially if someone runs hot early in the season or in the first few games, and they project even more growth. But if I'm deciding between Rodgers and Wilson, I'm going to take Rodgers every time this early in the season. Quarterbacks tend to be, you know, kind of the most consistent position across the industry when compared with their other counterparts, you know, the other skill positions, basically. And Rodgers is actually just among the most consistent of the consistent position. You know, taking a guy 66% completion percentage, got all those bugaboos out of his system last year, got to up to scoring the highest overall fantasy points. You know, this guy was just incredible. And getting him at 8,300 is actually super reasonable, right? I mean, don't you feel like we're going to wind up paying more for him as the season progresses? Like, for instance, Brady is up at 9,000. Breeze is at 8,600. Do you think Rodgers is a true talent, you know, 600 less than Brady or 300 less than some of these other guys?
No, definitely not. I mean, like, so a couple of, like, check boxes you get from this play here, right? So in the shootout category, like, I would put a shootout as, like, high over-under and pretty thin spread. This game is really basically the only one on the slate. Like, they have a 51 over under with the Packers as a slight favorite, I think -4 or -3. I just scrolled off of, while I was talking, -3. So that's like, and that's maybe considered like your home bump. So this is essentially, you know, a neutral site pick 'em game with the highest over under on the slate. And Rodgers, He was the highest scoring fantasy player last season of all the players. So for through 16 weeks. So and when you said about
so
his
you consistent, counted every player.
And I counted every player, player and I counted all the weeks, right? So and yeah. Now some of these, you know, you give another week to a guy like Andrew Luck or someone like that, he might have gotten there. But overall, there were, and maybe David Johnson was kind of pushing up close. But overall, he was the highest overall FanDuel scoring points quarterback or player on the season last year. And when he talks about his consistency, you know, quarterbacks are already pretty consistent, and his coefficient of variation was second among all quarterbacks. Only Matt Ryan was lower mm-hmm. than him, right? So only Matt Ryan was, that means like only Matt Ryan was more consistent on a week to week basis than Aaron Rodgers. Like it makes sense too. Like he has, and he has the same, this is the same makeup as Wilson to some degree, is that he can raise his floor on a given week by just being able to run, right? So like his ability to scramble and to just kind of draw out plays and get on the ground, including the weapons that he has and the accuracy. Yeah, I think it's pretty easy. Like the fact that he's coming, like you said, so much cheaper than these other guys too, makes it even easier. Like I get that Brady's not on the main slate, but you know, Breeze and Ryan and these guys have decent matchups. But for me, I think the running is actually just what puts it over the top. Like just the fact that he can do it. And that's going to be a theme for other guys that we kind of try to play on a week-to-week basis, just kind of going forward.
Sure, Rodgers, 370 yards, 4 touchdowns last season. Like that's just a lot of fantasy production that you just get tacked on to everything else. You know, that's an additional 52 points spread out over 16 weeks, obviously, but still quite good. I also think that people in general tend to overrate the Seattle defense at this point in their lifespan. I think that people are remembering the Super Bowl contending Seattle defenses that, you know, were absolutely locked down on wide receiver ones and twos. And they just weren't that last season. Last season, they allowed the 10th most passing yards. You know, that Green Bay allowed the 7th most, but allowed just 70 more yards than Seattle overall. So I think this matchup is actually a lot closer than most people realize. And in such a close situation, I'm just going to take the guy with a better track record and more talent. So, yeah, for me, Rodgers is a pretty straightforward cash game play. I mean, I think, frankly, he's got tons of GPP upside too, but for cash games, he's definitely where I'm going to land.
Yep, and just last thing, Seattle, around average defense against the pass, DVO a little bit better against the run. I mean, Rodgers does have maybe more of a running game with Ty Montgomery pretty locked into that spot. They didn't have that last year. They were forced to pass.
He was there for a lot last year too.
He was there for the end. I'm just saying, like, there were times where I think they were just forced to pass a lot more because they had nobody. Anyway, all this being said, Rodgers goes up as our top game, our top play of the week, and a quarterback, and I think that we'll probably see him at least in all lineups on FanDuel. It's probably going to be a little closer on DraftKings where the pricing, and we'll get down to that when we talk about the running backs, but the pricing gets a little tighter there, and there maybe are some ways to go off. The other guy we wrote up right below Rodgers, and he kind of fits a lot of the same profile, though, with one glaring exception, is Cam Newton. So Newton fits the running quarterback and has a couple weapons there. He's got a great matchup against San Francisco, but he really struggled at times last year. Do you think he's due for a bounce back? There was some injury stuff last year for him, like some concussion stuff and just general injury. You know, I think he had a shoulder problem. Do you see a bounce back year for him? And do you think this is a spot to target him against the San Francisco defense that was completely garbage last year?
Yeah, it's pretty tricky. So, I mean, I do think Newton has a lot of upside, and I think a lot of people will kind of be off it here. But I do think, San Francisco presents kind of a weird spot. So San Francisco last season allowed the fewest passing yards of any team in the NFL while getting eviscerated by the run in a way that was almost unprecedented. And that's because they were just losing so much. And so it's really hard to figure out, like, you know, the teams that were passing on San Francisco weren't really taking a lot of risks. They weren't launching the ball downfield. So even other numbers like DVOA or yards per attempt or the other numbers that people are going to want to use to evaluate a passing defense don't totally apply when you have a team that's this sort of like outlier level bad. Now, there could very well be just as bad this year, in which case you can apply the same lessons you learned from last year. I do think Newton probably, I think he brings actually most of his upside with his legs. I think his actual passing game, basically at this point in his career, he has a couple elite passing seasons, but sprinkled among those are a bunch of like pretty crappy ones, like low 3,000 yards or, you know, 210, 230 yards per game. So I don't think he's actually the sort of elite arm that you'll want for your cash game purposes. But the thing that really puts him on top for GPP considerations are, you know, you also can't get too many guys with 3,000 yards passing, but 600 or 700 yards on the ground. And so if we think a healthy Newton goes back to running a little bit more this season, then I think he's a guy you can get early whose price will climb and who will fall on more radars as the season goes along.
Yeah, the completion percentage was a real problem last year. 53% is is real bad. No, it's really bad. I mean, that's like bottom third or worse, maybe even bottom quarter of the league in terms of completion percentage. You know, he had some wide receiver issues. They didn't do a ton to correct that. You know, he's got pretty much the same wide receiver core. Christian McCaffrey, while not a receiver, does stand to probably catch some balls out of the backfield. They have playbooks for him. And, you know, I was reading the other day that they have like a special playbook just for him that they want to get him designed into the offense. So that is an additional weapon. But in terms of the wide receiver core, it's pretty much the same. So it's not like he's seeing any kind of like big target upgrade in the secondary. I do like the matchup. I, like you said, I like the fact that he can run. Compare him and Wilson. I like the fact that he's a little bit cheaper than Wilson. He's 100 less on FanDuel, and I think he's like 300 or 400 less on DraftKings. So all these being said, it's probably close between Wilson and Russell for me. But excuse me, Russell and Cam for me. I think I'm going to lean Newton here just because of the matchup. The last guy we
We can have a little no halftime challenge on that one if you'd like, because I like Wilson dramatically more than Newton here. If you don't know about no halftime, we'll just get their little spot out of the way now. No halftime is a great app where you can make one-on-one fantasy challenges. So you pick a player like I just did. I took Wilson. Sounds like Doug is taking the Newton side of things. We can head over to the no halftime app and I can actually issue that challenge for as much money as I would like. Doug can choose to accept it, and then it's game on once we get to kick off on Sunday. And actually, right now, No Halftime is offering a promo code, or if you use DFSR, you get an instant 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit. So go check their app out, tell them we sent you, and come accept all of Doug's Cam Newton-related challenges, especially if you can get the Russell Wilson side.
No, we love No Halftime. No Halftime's at the absolute best, and it's really close. I mean, these guys are essentially have the same amount of projection in our system right now. And one passing attempt or one rushing attempt kind of going either way would probably separate them. Like I said, I'm just kind of going a little bit more on the matchup. The last guy we wrote up, and it was just more on a cheap side because I didn't want to just write up all expensive plays because there are a couple other guys. I like Mariota here. Like you said, I like Russell Wilson. We didn't write him up. I wrote up Carson Wentz as a DraftKings play at 5,300. He gets to face Washington. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that's seeing... So here's what I'm kind of banking on. I'm wondering if you agree with this. I'm kind of banking on the fact that he's another season into his NFL progression, which is usually a good sign for quarterbacks, especially a guy who was serviceable last year, right? Like his completion percentage was like somewhere around 63%, which is fine for a rookie. And
it's good.
And they didn't rely on him to do a lot. They threw more with him in the second half of the season. When I kind of looked at the first half to the second half, he did throw more in the second half, which struck me as just gaining more confidence in his ability to be a drop back passer. And they're also just adding a better target guy in Alshon Jeffrey than Jordan Matthews. Like Alshon, when he's healthy, is creeping up toward like that elite level wide receiver. He's not in the tippy top of that group, but he's definitely better than Jordan Matthews. And they also had Torrey Smith. Do you think I'm right in this assessment that like his upgrade in personnel plus the additional year of just kind of growth for Wentz at 5,300 on DraftKings, that 5,300 really allows you to do what we might want to do when we talk about running backs here, which is pay a lot for them. How do you like Wentz?
No, I love him on DraftKings. I think it's a very astute observation that he's a great DraftKings play this week. I think Wentz is interesting because, you know, he came out really hot last year and kind of tailed off, as rookie quarterbacks are wont to do. Like, it's the first 16-game season of his career, right? So that makes sense. I'm a little concerned with Jordan Matthews' departure. That was his kind of most comfortable target last season. And losing that, even if you think Alshon Jeffrey is a true talent upgrade, there probably will be some adjustment period. That being said, like, he was a rookie quarterback. It's not like he's been throwing to the guy for... It's not Marvin Harrison and Peyton Manning, right?
Right.
It's like just like some guy leaves and some other guy comes in. Jeffrey, when healthy, is a tremendous talent and can kind of... What I really liked about this, and I wrote this up in the wide receiver section for today, but they've been having Jeffrey run a lot of slants and short crosses in spring training. What do they call this?
Preseason.
Still baseball. they've been having him run a lot of slants and crosses in the preseason, kind of running those routes that Wentz was comfortable with last season. So I think the fact that they're trying to get those guys in sync early on is a really, really good sign. I also think we see a growth season out of Zach Ertz this year. Ertz also runs a lot of the routes that Wentz has been throwing. So I don't see Torrey Smith as being super involved in this offense, at least early on. But I do like Wentz quite a bit. And I think Washington, actually, just an underratedly great matchup for opposing quarterbacks. Last season, they allowed the second highest yards per attempt in all of the NFL. The second most yards as well. So this was a team you could really throw on. The arrival of Josh Norman didn't really make that big a difference. You know, there's a lot of talk out of Washington camp that Norman will be shadowing wide receiver ones, but I'm just not sure that means as much as it used to. So, I like Wentz. I like a lot of the Eagles pieces here because they're all underpriced relative to where they could be if things start clicking. And, you know, there's a lot of talent. Things could absolutely start clicking here.
Yeah, I mean, Norman, and this is going to kind of go to the Alshon thing because we wrote him up too, which with wide receivers. But, you know, Norman, they kind of jacked him around last year. Like, he was going to not cover wide receiver ones. He was going to line up, I think, on the left side just to start the season no matter what. And then they kind of pivoted. According to Pro Football Focus, Norman just didn't even rate out as a top 10 cornerback last year. And look, he was 11, so I'm kind of cherry picking the metric that I was going to use there. I was going to say,
yeah, arbitrary end.
Well, if he was top 10, I was going to say he wasn't a top 9. So like that's kind of where I was going to land in terms of like and how I made that.
He wasn't even a top 9.5 quarterback,
right? But I mean, still, I think when people hear Josh Norman, they are probably thinking something along the lines of top 5 cover cornerback.
Yeah, Nnamdi Asomugha, like don't ever start a guy against
right,
this guy
like
no matter
Pete
what.
Pete Richard Sherman, these guys are just not they at least for last year, and that could be scheme and it could be just kind of decline in age, because that will happen to cornerbacks and they can kind of fall off a cliff when it goes. But he's just not, according to PFF, he's just not ranking out right now as a top 10 cornerback, and I do think people see him that way. Wide receiver ones last year were able to do damage against the Eagles. So this couple kind of wrapped up our Wentz, Alshon, and Ertz kind of conversation probably all at once. But I love the price on DraftKings. I love, actually, for tournaments, we'll talk about this tomorrow, pairing him and Jeffrey, pairing him and Ertz on DraftKings, even on FanDuel at times, just because I do think new situations like that, especially for a quarterback, no one's going to play him. So you're going to get separation on that play right there. Let's get to running backs. This is the other thing people spent most of the preseason and offseason talking about. Is the discussion between David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell. The sites understood this to some degree about their pricing and not totally. Like, I just don't think, like on FanDuel, you really don't have any issue playing both of them together. I know that they're in the 9,000s. It's probably just not high enough, especially for a guy like Johnson who was performing at like a 10,000 peak level at some point last year. But neither of those guys top over 9,500. It's a little closer on DraftKings where they both are over 9,000, and that does represent more of your cap. Are you incentivized this week to just, there was like a hashtag, it was like hashtag jam him in or something like that on Twitter that was going around, which was the idea that come hell or high water, at least on DraftKings, I'm playing both these guys, even if it kind of hurts my cap in other places. Do you see that right now as being your strategy, or do you think you can pivot away from one of these guys?
I mean, I don't think I would hashtag jam them in if they didn't come in our optimal lineups, because, you know, as we all know, my favorite team from week to week is just the optimal lineup. That's kind of
the one we root for.
That should be our tagline on the website now. But I really want to play both of these guys. I mean, you did an extensive write-up about them on the site, which people can go check out. But you almost don't need one, right? They're both just creme de la creme, probably the two best skill positions players overall, and they both have completely elite matchups here with Bell against Cleveland, who he's just absolutely destroyed basically every time he's ever faced them, and Johnson going up against Detroit, both totally in their primes, you know, totally affordable, and so on. I do think it'll be interesting to see how many people elect to pivot elsewhere, and, you know, because we've noticed this kind of trend towards consensus in the industry on other sports and even football to some degree last season. But the talk, and like when I was going and peeking around at what some of the other people in the industry have been talking about, and, you know, how their optimal lineups were shaking out, it kind of seemed, and this is also like they're both such public players too, like they're, you know, it doesn't always work out in DFS that the people that are the number one and two overall picks in your draft will also be the best DFS plays. In fact, it rarely works out that way. But the fact that it's working out that way too just leads me to believe that all the square money is going to come in on Johnson and Bell, all the shark money is going to come in on Johnson and Bell, and we're going to be left with like six random dudes in Utah who are like, huh? Oh man, I didn't realize I should play those guys. But that's kind of where I'm leaning for cash games, at least on FanDuel.
Yeah, well, on DraftKings, like, you know, when we run optimal lineups right now, they are in lineup 8, right? So, and it's less than half a point off the top lineup, right? So that, again, is another situation where it's like if we gave either one of those guys, well, specifically Johnson, Bell is showing up more than Johnson is, but just, I think probably just because of the matchup. But if we just gave Johnson like one more carry or one more target, like that is all, just to be clear about, you know, how close these decisions are sometimes, either one of those things to Johnson would push him well into the top lineup alongside of Bell. On FanDuel, it's just 100% of both. I think you're going to see that in cash games. I think you're going to see them 70% owned or higher on main slate cash games. It could be higher for honestly, it could be 80%. I'm not sure. Like, they're so much better, and it's so easy to get price, like, it's just so easy to get value in at some of the other positions that this is just at least in those positions, at least at running back, does not strike me as the place where you want to pay down, because these guys, again, are, I mean, they're so, so much better than everybody else, and it's just really not close. And again, we're not telling anyone anything new. If you do any kind of season-long or daily or read anything, or just your eyes glanced over an article over the last 6 months, you understand this about these guys. But we do have to make the decision about price on a week-to-week basis. The one guy...
So, yeah, let's. I was going to say, I think there we do have a way you can go if you can't afford both of them, at least on DraftKings. And you and I talked about him in a little bit in our last podcast, and I think he's actually going to be a little bit more controversial than maybe we thought originally, and that's Todd Gurley. You know, I've seen people talking both ways on him. People who have said that his first season was the fluke, people who have said that last season was the fluke, people that have come in on both sides and kind of figured that he's going to middle out as something rather average. But right now, Gurley is priced like someone who's considerably below average. Like when we started last season, it's easy to forget, Gurley was in like the mid 8,000s. Like he was like 8,500. And it made sense, right? He came off a 13-game season where he had 1,100 yards. You know, extrapolated over a 16-game season, you're talking about a 1,300 or so yard season with something like 12 touchdowns, which would warrant that sort of pricing, you know. But Gurley comes into this season having played the full 16 games and averaging just over 50 yards a game. So what do you think about Todd Gurley? Because our system's very bullish on him right now for a big bounce back given his age, you know, the Rams sort of development here and the way Vegas perceives their total to go in week one. But what do you see?
Well, let me start with that Vegas total, because I think that's a good place to start. We've seen year over year that one of the better ways to judge just kind of running back consistency is to be a home favorite, right? Chris Raybon, he does great work at 4 for 4. He wrote for us for a while. He actually just tweeted this out the other day with a consistency rating about, you know, just looking at Vegas spreads and how running backs are consistent. The most consistent across, you know, a large sample size is if you're a home favorite for a running back, right? It makes sense. Like you're stand to get the ball more, you stand to just be winning and then running the clock out, things like that. So that's sort of Gurley independent, but he's actually one of the few running backs that fits that mold this week. There's just the way the schedule has worked out and just some of the other matchups. He is really kind of the only big home favorite. I guess the Texans are as well against Houston. But so from that position, I like him. It really, and that position happens because of Luck being out week one, right? I think Luck being out week one in a lot of ways, like for instance, the Vegas piece of just whether you're a favorite or not, we had that baked into our system as like sort of a multiplier. It's not a huge one, but we want to account for players that are going to be favorites. And actually Luck being ruled out boosted Gurley's projection. We were already pretty bullish on him, and that actually helped him even more because it swung the line like almost 8 points or something like that. From
sure, well, yeah, I mean, going from Luck to Scott Tolson is a pretty big deal. But aren't there a lot of home favorites?
No, there's really not.
We'll have to see him. Denver, Minnesota, Dallas, Green Bay.
Yeah, but a lot of like the Denver, Rams. Denver, those guys aren't on the main slate. I'm focusing mostly on main slate. Minnesota and Denver both are not on the main slate here. We didn't do that. Dallas, I'm not interested in Ezekiel against that Giants defense, just because Giants are like one of the best running defenses.
So it's a combination of both matchup factors and the home favorite thing. But you're saying that from your estimation, he's the only running back who's both a home favorite and has a favorable matchup.
Correct.
Is that
correct?
A better way to
yes,
say?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And by the way, we kind of grade out points about how big of a favorite you are. So and he -4 is significant, right? Like that you get a little bit more at -4 sure. than you do at -3, like for Ty Montgomery and Green Bay. So that is a good spot for him there. I want to believe in a bounce back for Gurley, who the team is still 100% committed to him. They don't have, and there's no running backs waiting in the wings. There's no running back by committee. They had signed Lance Dunbar. He got hurt. He was supposed to be the third down back. It seems like Gurley is going to take over some of those third down back things. They're just committed to him. And in a lot of ways, the commitment to him is as safe as any other thing, any other like factor that we can see in a running back. A lot of other running backs have question marks, and a lot of the question marks are around how much their volume is going to be, right? Like, you look at, let me think of an example. Like, you look at, like, the Seattle situation, or you look at even Tennessee, right, where you have DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, right? Like, even these guys that are kind of elite. A lot of the question marks you get around these guys are they going to get the ball enough to warrant Jonathan Stewart, Christian McCaffrey? Are they going to get the ball enough to warrant their price? Gurley's actually one of the other few guys that doesn't have that question mark actually his name either. Like, there's no one waiting for him. There's no one. There's
right, except you don't have to pay up for it, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I think for a lot of, like, for Bell and Johnson, that you could say that to be true. Maybe for Ezekiel Elliott,
sure.
Although, as you point out, not a great matchup. But yeah, as you go down the list, like Murray, Devonta Freeman, you know, LeGarrette Blount, Carlos, you know, none of these guys have very good situations. But, and incidentally, they're all, many of these guys are more expensive than him as well. And I think the combination of both price and situation and a solid matchup with Indy, the 25th ranked rush defense last season, all that together, I think he's a very solid try for week one. Now, if he goes out there and rushes for 55 yards again, this might just be his real price, you know. But I think that we'll know. I think we're going to actually just learn a ton after this week.
Right.
The Rams have every incentive to play this conservatively, to just put the ball in his hands and see what they have here. Because, you know, if it turns out that Gurley is actually the pumpkin, and the reason he looked so good the first year was that he just showed up 3 weeks after everyone else and had fresh legs or something, I don't know. Then, but I think we'll know, I guess,
yep.
is my point. I think with a whole other preseason, we'll know. But this is a rare case. I'm not usually the person who likes to try to catch the falling knife and predict the bounce back and all that kind of stuff. I tend to play this a lot more conservatively, but I'm ready to try that with Gurley.
And I don't think I'm overstating by, like, well, you know, you said we're going to learn a lot. I think this is one of those situations, like, if it doesn't work here, it might just not work, right? Like, this is all the thing. Or, like, if it could work again, but I'm not going to be the one that goes for it, right?
Well, we would have 17 games,
yep.
right? Now, right now we have 16, and we have a whole season between games, so this game is more relevant than any of the individual ones from last year. But I think if he continues in that same trend, given the matchup and all the rest and, you know, whatever, all their preparation, I think we can probably move on.
The last guy I wrote up was Carlos Hyde. More of, a DraftKings play here than anything else. He enters the season as a starting running back. He's got a lot of things going against him. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on him because I don't think he's a FanDuel play at all. But he is the RB1 in San Francisco. He has shown games where he can put up a lot of yards. Like, he has that in his repertoire, and San Francisco is not very good, and they have a lot of things going against them here. It's mostly his price at 4,600. Like, he's the only running back priced in this tier that is essentially the running back one on his team, right? So that's not saying a lot, and I don't have a million superlatives for him except to say, like, if we're looking for a cheap running back, I think Hyde fits that category, and I wouldn't love playing him, but I also think that there's some safety, especially if somehow San Francisco can jump out to a lead in this game. But it's mostly just the DraftKings price. Let's go on to wide receiver. Yeah, you wrote up Antonio Brown as the lead guy. He's expensive. Do you see him as a way to pivot off of, because you can't really play Johnson, Bell, and Brown, right, altogether, and you probably can't even play.
Yeah, this was more of a, I just wanted to bring him up. So, like, the way that I ordered the wide receivers there for this week, just to clarify, I tend to try to point out the good big money plays first, because I think that's what people are looking for in many cases. They're trying to figure out, hey, well, if I'm going to spend up, who should I spend on? I do think Brown is the best of that group. I highly suspect he won't be in any of your cash games this week, because price matters, and you're not probably going to be able to play Bell, Johnson, and Brown, and he's the worst of that group. So, like, in terms of points per dollar, in my estimation, and also just in terms of floor, I think Bell and Johnson are just locks to get their touches, and Brown was a little bit more hit or miss last season. I really wanted to shine a light on him, though, particularly because of, I wanted to talk about why his stats kind of went in the wrong direction a little bit last year. So Brown, you know, he's been one of the most consistent wide receivers in all of football, and last year kind of tailed off, and I think some people are a little quick to write him off. I mean, he's not super old. Like, Bell's only 29 years old, and he had a lot of, like, little weird things going on last year, right? So, first of all, was Roethlisberger was banged up, missed three games. Brown had his own little ailments and, you know, kind of had some games where he was used more as a decoy or just wasn't very effective. Like, at Cincinnati, he had just 5 targets, you know, 6 targets against Indianapolis. These types of games don't really happen when both Roethlisberger and Brown are healthy. In fact, they almost never happen. He's basically a lock for double-digit targets. I think people are seeing a step back from him this season in some ways and, you know, kind of penciling some other big names like, you know, Beckham and maybe Julio Jones in as better plays than Brown. So I really wanted to call attention to him as a great big money pivot for big tournaments. Like, there's just a chance he outscores Le'Veon Bell in the first week against a Joe Haydenless Browns, right? So mostly I wanted to call attention to him from that regard. But yeah, I don't think you're going to wind up seeing him in any of our
categories. No, I agree with all those sentiments, right? Like, I do think he probably doesn't get as much talk as he should considering how good he is. I think there's some speculation that Martavis Bryant eats into some of his targets, but I don't see that as being a huge.
I just don't think so. They do different things. Like, Martavis Bryant is the kind of like the desperation downfield guy, or like the let's surprise him on first down guy. But he's not really like a possession receiver, and Brown can actually, it's one of the few receivers in the NFL, and what makes him such a special talent and so valuable for DFS purposes, where he can really combine big play upside and touchdown potential with just being an excellent possession receiver too. So I think that I think he's just a great player.
Jordy Nelson is the other guy you wrote up. Now, right now, we have Jordy Nelson as, at least on FanDuel scoring, and I'll check DraftKings in a second, but we have him as the second overall points wide receiver this week after Brown. Same thing DraftKings, over guys like Julio Jones, Mike Evans, Michael Thomas, even Odell. Do you think that's correct? I think that, you know, I see this projection as being pretty bullish. I looked into all the reasons why, and it kind of made sense. Do you think, I mean, I have to believe that our system would get crazy separation on Jordy here compared to some of the other names that I just mentioned. I'm saying raw points. Like, I think it's even better when you consider his price. Are you comfortable with this projection as him being going into the week, the second highest overall projected wide receiver?
Yeah, I just don't know what people don't like about Jordy Nelson. Like, that's the thing I would want to figure out. Why, like, the $7,700 price tag just seems like an actual straight up mistake to me. If you look at his track record, so last season he came back after missing a whole season, right? He missed all of 2015 with an injury. In 2016 he came back, he had the fifth most receptions in the NFL, and he had the sixth most targets in the NFL, and scored 14 touchdowns, right? And so, like, this guy was used in basically every phase of the game, with Green Bay's kind of tenuous goal line back situation. Nelson, in some cases, kind of becomes like the de facto goal line back, and that they'll throw short passing routes to him because of his just big body and great hands. And last season, he did take a step back in terms of yards per reception and yards per target, but he was, like, on these exact stats in 2014, like, the stats were almost identical. I think he was off by one target and one reception from 2014. And obviously, he was getting more yards per catch and stuff. But he was, like, an easy $9,000 receiver that year. I'm sure you remember this. Like, he was $9,000, $9,200. He was a unanimous play at those prices many weeks when healthy. And now he's $7,700. And I just don't really get it. I mean, like I mentioned, Seattle was just not good against the pass last year. There's no way that you can spin it. Like, if you look at any stat, basically, versus any wide receiver position, they simply weren't good. It doesn't matter what the names of the people who are in their secondary are. Nelson's excellent. He's still not super old, and he's got a great track record. So I'm very comfortable playing Nelson. I think we get a tremendous value on him. I would be more concerned about it if we had to pay Antonio Brown type salaries for Nelson. Like, I don't think I would be as excited if we had to pay $9,000, but at $7,700, it just feels like a steal. And I think if he has a big week one, his price will instantly be in the mid eights, if not up back near where it was.
We said this on the No Halftime Takeover podcast last time, but he was the most consistent wide receiver in football last year. Like, his coefficient of variation was the lowest, and it kind of wasn't close.
And what do you want from the guy? With $7,700, this guy's
he had a 0.38 CV, which is like quarterback level low. Like, frankly, like, you know, other guys in his
right, a coefficient
yes,
of
exactly.
variation.
Yeah. And that's like standard deviation divided or average divided by standard deviation. Oh no, other way around. Standard deviation divided by average. But I'm staring at this and trying to make a Mike Evans quote too. But like other guys in his sort of overall fantasy point range, 0.5 for Evans, 0.45 for Brown, and those guys are considered low too. Then, like, you get to Beckham and Hilton and Julio Jones, way higher. He's so freaking consistent. And again, according to Pro Football Focus cornerback rankings, Richard Sherman 17th last year, right? So he wasn't even in the top 16, right? he wasn't in the top 16. He was 17th, right? So they
16 actually is relevant because that's half.
Right. So I think this just all lines up really favorably for him. I don't think, again, it's going to be hard to get his salary and some of these other running backs, and I would definitely prefer the running backs in those cases. Like, if you're choosing who to pay for, if you're going to pay big salaries for Bell and Johnson, and you can't get Jordy, then don't take Jordy, right? But in terms of stacking, even like cash game stacking with Rodgers, I think it's fine, and I think we're going to get separation on him too, because people do not want to target that Seattle defense for the reasons you kind of mentioned, sort of being buried in the past performance and just came, maybe they're just not carrying that same performance all the way through to what their present day team is. After those guys, we mentioned Alshon Jeffrey. I don't think we need to go back to them. He was the other guy that we had as part of our value plays and still like that play. We'll probably talk about tomorrow, but I probably throw Terrell Pryor in there as well. I just love him as a change of scenery guy. I'm very high on Pryor. He's a guy that I will probably go back to this article right now and say, please consider this, because I didn't realize he was in there. All right, let's finish at tight end. You roll Kelsey. Do you see us paying up for a guy like Kelce this week? He's kind of ranges toward the more expensive non-Gronk category of tight end, or do you can see us paying down? Do you think, is he on there because he's kind of like a raw points guy, or do you see him as actually having value against New England? I guess it's not on the main slate as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was kind of trying to draw a juxtaposition between Kelce and Olsen here, and trying to figure out, you know, because I think Kelce is the tight end du jour. He's a young guy. Again, people want to kind of put him, draw a line through his seasons and his progressions, and the fact that he's added, you know, around 15 receptions per year in each of his second and third seasons in the NFL. He was obviously the leading pass catcher out of the tight end position last season with 1,100 yards, and Olsen was second, of course. But, you know, so he's kind of, people perceive him to be this breakout guy who has room for even more upside. And I was juxtaposing him against Greg Olsen because I think Olsen is actually just criminally underrated out of the tight end position. He's been the steadiest non-Gronkowski tight end, by my estimation, in the NFL for the last three seasons. He's topped 1,000 yards in each of those seasons. He was targeted 123, 124, and 129 times. So, like, it seems to me that the Panthers have basically an exact game plan of how many times they're going to throw to Olsen each game, and they do. And when they do, they know pretty much exactly what they're going to get. Obviously, like, this isn't a main slate consideration, but say you are playing the Thursday slate and you're trying to pick between the two, or, you know, as we go forward into the season, if you're trying to make this decision, which I suspect a lot of people will. Like, I think a lot of people aren't going to want to pay up for Gronkowski. They're going to want to... A lot of people are going to want to middle out this position. I mean, this position is very grisly if you look closely at who's actually playing and what their target situations might be for week one. If you're picking between the two, I would rather have Olsen, I think, on the tail end of his prime rather than Kelce kind of emerging, which, you know, again, if you compare this to what I was saying about Gurley, you know, I'm not someone who likes to project a lot of growth. And I think if you take these guys at face value for who they are, you compare the matchups. And again, you know, this will only matter if you're playing the Thursday slate, but a lot of people will be, you know, especially listening to this podcast on a Wednesday or Thursday. I like Olsen here. So that's kind of the stand I was trying to make. And yeah, I'm curious to know what your thoughts are between those two guys.
No, I probably prefer Olsen as well. I do think you see people just go cheap at tight end and just try to catch lightning in a bottle.
So who are the cheap tight ends that you like this week?
Ertz, yeah. For one. I think Ertz will be pretty chalky on DraftKings, where he's only 3,500. And he is actually a guy that's shown target share in the past. And so I do think I think that he will be maybe the most popular tight end on DraftKings, at least. I mean, it's a closer on FanDuel. I'm here, where he's just not as cheap. He's 5,900. Olsen's 6,600. So the price difference there is probably not big enough. I mean, guys like Zach Miller who are playing. The tight end's weird. Tight end's not great. The guys with any kind really of pedigree name are simply too expensive. Like, you can't, on both sites, you really just can't justify paying. Like, well, I mean, he's not on the main slate. You really can't just, considering the other plays, you can't really play Gronk. You can't play Jordan Reed. I don't think you can even play Olsen at his price with some of the other guys that are out there, Kelce, Jimmy Graham. The list goes on. Any guy that's basically over 6,000 on FanDuel, I just think you're getting better value at every other position from a points per dollar value.
Isn't Ertz just like, I mean, he's 5,900, but he's 700 less. Our system likes Olsen better on a points per dollar basis than it does Ertz, you know?
Oh, I'm saying I don't like either. That's my point on FanDuel, is I don't like either. I think on DraftKings, I'm fine playing 3,500 for Ertz. I think, again, you'll see him and he'll be the most popular tight end play this week, I think.
He might be the most popular play on FanDuel as well, frankly. Like, I think people are going to want to save up. I think they're going to want to spend up at some other big positions. I think, again, people underrate Olsen. I think, like, if you compare those two, in my mind, Ertz is basically a pure speculation play. You're just saying, like, hey, with Matthews out of the picture, Ertz has a bigger role. Like, that's your thesis, I guess, if you're going in that direction. And I don't disagree with it, by the way. I think that's a very reasonable sort of thing to think. But with Olsen, you just get locked in 1,000 yards a season and, you know, 125 targets per season, and I think that's really worth a lot, and I think it's kind of underrated in general.
I think I'm, you know, this is early for me to know this because I've kind of wait till things finally shake out, but I could see a scenario where we just go complete bargain bin tight end on FanDuel and just say, like, let's start hoping, like Zach Miller's, you know, Kobe Fleener kind of style, Austin Hooper, maybe he gets a few more targets in Atlanta.
I hate that. I totally agree that our system might want to do that, but It just feels so much worse.
It sure does feel worse. And this is something we can discuss. We can discuss a little bit more when we talk about the game-by-game breakdowns. But the tight end, it's mostly just all to say tight end's just real bad. The guys who are good and consistent are expensive. And they're
Old and they're not good anymore.
Right. And they're more expensive like than their wide receiver counterparts for the same price. I know they're not the same position. And I know you need to, like, you know, FanDuel doesn't let you play wide receivers at tight end. So I get this part. But, you know, just from like sort of a skill set thing, you have three places to spend up for wide receivers. Receiver and like each one of those wide receivers in the same price range is just outperforming its tight end counterpart, but the tight ends are more expensive just because there's the scarcity of them, and the scarcity of them, how few there are that are good, creates a real problem. So like I said, DraftKings, I don't think it's a problem. FanDuel, actually do think it is a problem. Real quick, defensive special teams, I think you see the Bills still as a chalk play this week. We'll talk a little more about defensive special teams, kind of breaking them down when we go game by game tomorrow, but I do think you see Bills against the Jets as one of the more popular plays. Not to say they're going to be complete chalk, but I think they will be very popular. All right, we're going to come back tomorrow. We'll do game by game breakdown, talk about some of the stacks you can kind of utilize and employ this week, and then we'll talk about some more running backs. We'll talk about some more wide receivers. We'll kind of just talk it all game by game. DFSR.com/NFL, free 7-day trial to our projection system. You head on over, and it's just $29.95 a month after that. But that free trial is going to take you all the way through week one. So we will talk to you again tomorrow, buddy. Can't wait to break down every game.
Yeah, looking forward to it.